call the House Committee on Healthcare to order and talk a little bit about what's going to go on. We are carrying over House Bill 4154 to Wednesday. We have received a number of amendments that I want to note. They're all in OLIS. We have received them for the public record. Dash 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And they are all available in OLIS now, available for the public. We'll take that up with some of those amendments on Wednesday. And we have, we're holding at the moment House Bill 4050 because we don't have the fiscal on the dash two amendments. We'll check again later in the session to see if the fiscal, there is no problem with that, with the dash two amendments on it. At least I think we have agreement to pass it. I'll talk about it when we bring up the work session. We do have all the material we need for House Bill 4137 to move it to Ways and Means, and I'm going to open up a work session on 4137 for that purpose. May I have a motion?
Chair, I move House Bill 4137 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves that we move House Bill 4132 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. 37. I'm sorry, 4137 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Off the hill, huh? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Whiteley?
Aye.
Representative Whiteman?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Excused.
Representative Ponger?
Excused.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenwood?
Aye. Motion carries, and 4137 is on the way to the Ways and Means Committee. Close the work session on House Bill 4137 and go to a public hearing on House Bill 4002. Will you tell us about that bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4002 makes changes to the educational and training qualifications necessary to be licensed to practice psychology. It applies to individuals who submit to the State Board of Psychologist Examiner's application for the licensure before, on, or after the effective date of this act. I believe there's somebody on the phone. Is that true?
Is,
I have to text her to get her on.
Get her on right now. I know. We did move fast, didn't we?
Okay.
Is Jim out there?
He's. I don't know where he is. He's coming back, and we have another witness who just went out to move his car because we thought it was going to be later. So I'll be right back.
Okay.
Let's stand at ease till we get some order.
we need to open it up.
For the...
I'm sorry. Hold on, Jim. We are back in order, and we are in a public hearing on House Bill, is that 4002?
Yes.
We have the mic? Yeah, we're back on.
And if I can just give my colleague the phone number for calling, for her to call in.
There's somebody on the line.
There is one person, but she's with the opposition.
The opposition. And I think we have one going to be here and one on the phone. Is that right?
And we have, Mr. Chair, we have one live witness as well.
Okay.
Moving a car.
And I have a couple of other background materials I want to. So, Mr. Chair, Jim Gardner, representing Walden University, which is a affiliate of Laureate Educational Services, which is a very large global entity that provides both online and hybrid online in brick-and-mortar education opportunities for students worldwide. Our total student population globally at this point is about 800,000 students. One of the programs that that we have offered in the past has been a doctoral program in psychology, and we have had a number of Oregonians who have taken advantage of that. You're going to see an Oregonian story about one such individual who has really compiled quite an impressive record of service. The bill...
That's a PhD.
It's a PhD program in psychology. That's correct. We have had graduates in Oregon, all of whom have successfully completed the exam for licensure. And we have a kind of a population of students that is a little bit out of the ordinary. These tend to be older students. They tend to be place-bound students, often from rural areas, often in a second career situation, or in a family situation that would not allow them to really attend a traditional brick-and-mortar school. But they're, and you will hear from one of them in person, and you'll see the story about one of the other ones. They're very, very interesting, dedicated students who really need this resource to pursue their dreams. We were, as Mr. Chair, as you will remember, we were here in 2013 with this same legislation. I think you wisely counseled us to let's see what the APA, the American Psychology Association, does in terms of their willingness to accredit institutions that are substantially online. And they have gone through that process, and as our other witness will testify, when Tracy Marsh, who's one of the directors of the program, the APA has strengthened its commitment not to recognize or accredit programs that are substantially online. So we're kind of back where we started in terms of that issue. And one of the things I really want to emphasize is, and this bill, I will be the first to concede, may not be precisely the right pathway toward our objective. Our objective is very simple. We want to be eligible for examination or accreditation if we pass muster by APA or whoever that accrediting agency is that the state may select. Right now, we're shut out at the door because we are substantially online. We are not able to essentially validate our program. I'm confident that if we could get in the door for accreditation, we would pass without any problem. But that's basically our problem is. Like many other fields of education, we're moving, and we have moved, to a substantially online environment, coupled with a residential element that we still think is very necessary. What this bill does technically is that it creates parity between APA accreditation and institutions that are regionally accredited. We think that's a valid direction to go, but there may be other ways to pursue the objective of at least allowing our institution and implicitly our students to benefit from this kind of education.
And by regional accreditation, you mean the institution being accredited?
That's correct.
That is
correct. It's the way that regional accreditation works. There are a group of about a half a dozen regional accrediting bodies that are recognized by the U.S. Department of Education, and they accredit the institution. And Walden is accredited by one of those, and it has been for a long time. So, in summary, Mr. Chair, we've enjoyed and had a fairly
Hello,
long
Tracy
period.
Tracy Marsh is on the phone.
Okay, good. Tracy, I'm just finishing up my testimony. We've had a fairly lengthy engagement with the state of Oregon and very successful in terms of graduating students, having students pass, having students with an exceptionally low loan default rate, which is, you know, in the range of 4%, which is really remarkable compared to with tuition rates that are comparable or lower than in-state tuition rates for the three brick-and-mortar institutions that operate in the state of Oregon. I think as you study these materials, you hear these witnesses, you'll recognize that our students, they're kind of a special kind of student. They're, as I said, they're place-bound, they're older, they're very committed to their career objectives, but they're just not physically able to attend for an extended period of time, a year or more, a brick-and-mortar institution. They just can't do it. And the state will lose the benefit of those people if we can't reopen our doors. Right now, for new students, our doors are shut. Because we can't, under the way that the regs are written now, and especially with the OBPE, the Board of Psychologist Examiners, moving aggressively toward APA-only accreditation, the doors are shut to us and to our students. And I think maybe with that, Mr. Chair, perhaps I could turn it over to Dr. Tracy Marsh.
Hi, Dr. Marsh.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, please introduce yourself.
I certainly will. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tracy Marsh. I'm the program director for the Counseling Psychology Doctoral Program at Walden. And I am speaking today in support of HB 4002, which I think we all know would modify the existing requirements for licensure as a psychologist so that students, graduates from regionally accredited universities, in addition to those from APA accredited programs, would be eligible. Don't know if folks are aware, but there are only three APA accredited programs currently in Oregon. And of those three, two are in the Portland area and one is down in Eugene. This isn't a situation that works real well for students who might be place-bound, non-traditional students, where a blended program that would include both online and face-to-face curriculum would be a very viable option. And we've seen that the state certainly would benefit from those individuals whose skills are vitally needed to overcome the shortage of mental health practitioners serving Oregonians, and particularly in the more rural areas of the state. Currently, and most recently reaffirmed, APA has essentially categorically excluded any program that is considered substantially online from even applying for accreditation, which I find disheartening because it's really contrary to the preponderance of evidence that exists that supports the efficacy of both blended and online learning as being equivalent to and even in some cases slightly superior to face-to-face education. I really want to point out that this bill in no way provides any special accommodation for graduates of regionally accredited universities. It just simply gives them the opportunity to apply for licensure. They still have to meet all of the other application requirements, such as completing the standard core curriculum, completing 3 years of on-site supervised field experience, and, of course, passing the national examination. And I think, as Jim Gardner mentioned, all of our graduates to date in Oregon have become successfully licensed, and none have any record of disciplinary action. I also want to hit home an important point, which is this bill really in no way lowers the bar for licensure as a psychologist in Oregon. And in fact, in passing this bill, Oregon would join many other states that recognize regional accreditation. And those include California, New York, Texas, Illinois, Washington, Arizona, Nevada, and New Jersey. So I really do look forward to the continued leadership of the Oregon Legislative Assembly to ensure that all students in the state of Oregon have access to doctoral education in psychology, and that all individuals have access to quality, evidence-based mental health care. So with that being said, I really do appreciate the opportunity to testify via telephone, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Let's open up for questions of these witnesses.
Yes, hi, Marcia. Thank you.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you. I just wondered how many have graduated from this program in Oregon over the last, say, 5 years, and how many are practicing now?
We have had 7 graduates in Walden, from Walden, and all 7 have become licensed. I don't have full counts on the number of, you know, on their current employment status. That's a little bit tougher to get just from alumni relations standpoint.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer, you will hear from one of the students who has completed the coursework and is in the process of writing a dissertation a little bit later.
We have another witness.
Yeah. Yes, one more. We have one more witness.
Will you bring the witness?
Yeah.
We have a couple of witnesses.
On the other side.
On the other side.
Hi, I'm Brian Longworth. I'm a student at Walden University. In the process of working on my dissertation and starting an internship in May in Phoenix, Arizona.
And perhaps maybe tell the committee a little bit about your background and the specific field that you specialize in and why the manpower shortage is so pressing there.
Okay. They asked me to tell my story. For the last 10 years, I've been working in a clinic that primarily works with sexual offenders and domestic violence offenders. The reason why I got into that field was that 2 of my children were impacted by that by an ex-relative. And because of that, it shifted fields. I got a master's in counseling from what is now Northwest Christian University. And while working at Choices under Dr. Stephen Muzak for the last 10 years, I've seen that there is quite a gap in service providers versus a need in working with that particular field. Dr. Muzak in Eugene, Dr. Davis in Salem are 2 of the leading figures in the field, and they're both in their 60s and thinking about retirement. So along those lines, I decided that I would look online because I knew that with a family and children, I couldn't just go to school. So I looked online and I saw that Walden was accredited. At the time, Oregon allowed people from Walden to be able to be licensed here, so I figured, well, this works. And during my time at Walden, I'm not sure that I would do it differently. Obviously, if I was 25 and just finished my master's, maybe I would. But in my 30s with a family, working in the field, it has been tremendous for me as far as being able to apply the tools for diagnosis, for therapy, for just general working with clients along the way. At the same time, I am learning at Walden, and then also getting supervision from my mentor in Eugene, Dr. Muzak.
Okay.
Part of the reason I'm here is there are other people that I work with in the field that I think would make great psychologists, that are master-level therapists, that are working with specialty populations such as sex offenders. And I think to overlook people who have experience in the field and not give them an avenue to do that, I think is short-sighted, in my opinion. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions of this panel? Is that Kim?
No. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Again, apologize for the delay.
I guess this would be a good time for me to comment, although I was just sitting here thinking of I taught my first class 55 years ago now, and probably it's about as traditional as you get. And I believe for the longest time that that courses on the internet were fraudulent. I've since come to realize that we live in a new world. So we are going to need to find ways to do learning. And it's got me thinking about this in a whole new light. And I think I'm going to leave the notion that automatically rejecting learning simply because it's delivered in one particular model may be a little 1990s. But well, it's an interesting issue to be talking about.
May I respond to that? Sir, I would...
You should say yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a bachelor's degree and two master's degrees from brick-and-mortar schools, and before my time at Walden, I would have been right along those lines, but I've been surprised at how interactive you can actually be with other students, and especially when you're in the field and applying it at the same time.
I also, as a lifetime reader of Doonesbury, find Walden an unfortunate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I believe we preceded Doonesbury, but you live with what you live with.
Okay. We have, we have at least one more online. Robin Henderson, who's been with us on several occasions. And we have Cliff Johansson, is that right, in person? Do we have...
And Dr. Fran Furter in person.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. That's right. Dr. Fran Furter, thank you. Can you join us?
Please.
Come on.
Oh, both of you.
Yeah, both. Come on, join us.
Mr. Chair, may I say something first?
You absolutely may, and you
thank
can
you.
Introduce these witnesses.
Thank you. I would actually like to introduce Dr. Furter, and the reason for that is because she is here at my request, and I want to make that very clear. She currently also serves as the chair of the Board of Psychologist Examiners. And the governor has not declared a position on this bill. So she is not here speaking on behalf of the board. But I asked her to come because, in my view, and I am a retired psychologist, I want to be clear about my relationship to this.
Psychologist in recovery.
And you've said that several times, and that's perhaps a good diagnosis. But... I think she is probably more familiar with professional standards, or as familiar as anyone in the entire state. And I just felt like it was important to ask her to be here so that we had the benefit of her expertise on this topic. But I did want to make the disclaimer that she is not here in her official capacity, which is a different issue, so that we don't get her crosswise with the governor or with ethics or any of these other issues.
We'll put that in the record. You're here speaking only as an individual.
Thanks.
Please begin then.
Representative Greenlick, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair,
My name for the record is Dr. Fran Furter. And what I was asked to address, and I apologize if some of you probably already know some of this, but I was asked to address the difference between regional and program accreditation. Regional accreditation, as I think you stated earlier, one of you did, has to do with looking at the institution. It looks at the finances of an institution. It looks at the programs of an institution. And it asks the question, is this institution viable? Can it educate? Can it do what it says it's supposed to do? It does not look at individual programs. And that's a critical difference. So program accreditation goes into an already regionally accredited school. Program accreditation presupposes regional accreditation, goes into a school, and it looks at the individual programs, and the people who do that looking are the professionals from that program. So in a school of dentistry, dentists would look at the program. We're here about psychology, so psychologists would look at the program and accredit it or not. And they would continue to look at it. So they don't just look at it and accredit it. They continue to monitor it so that a program can't slide backwards and lose its force. We have seen some of that. There's a wide variety of difference in actual programming in regionally accredited schools. So I don't know if you have any questions specifically about those differences, but the program, maybe a personal example might help. If I was going to have heart surgery, I would want my cardiologist to have been evaluated and judged, and I would want his or her program directed by other physicians, not by legislators or academics in general, mathematicians, for example. So the difference between those two forms of accreditation really is crucial for this conversation.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I may, a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Following on this line of discussion, I think you've done some research about Oregon and Oregon's boards.
Yes.
And boards across the nation about this issue of who determines the standards for professions versus the academic quality of a program, which, at least in my simplistic way, is the difference that you were just discussing.
Yes, yes.
And so what have you found in regards to who determines the standards for professional licensure in this state and in other states?
Okay. We have taken a very close look at virtually all the rule requirements for licensure for psychologists in all of the states, including Washington, D.C. What we found is that in all of them, boards, the professional board of psychology has the final word on determining the criteria for qualifications for licensure.
The board rather than the legislature?
Yes. The legislature can determine some things. Some things are actually in statute. That's usually then turned over to a board to fine-tune the things like internship qualifications, coursework qualifications.
I would like to follow through on that brain surgeon.
You would, okay.
Because I think that's...
I think I said heart surgeon, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, some people go to medical school offshore.
Mm-hmm.
And they might go in Grenada or Grenada or whatever that place is. And then they come back to the United States and get into a residency. And they get a different kind of experience now. And they get into a residency, a surgical residency, and maybe even a neurosurgical residency, and I would want my brain surgeon judged on the extent to which they succeeded in the residencies,
mm-hmm.
In their post experience, rather than based on the specific medical school they went to, whether that had been individually recognized. I mean, it seems to me that's a little bit what's being asked for in this bill. It's say, judge us on the basis of our competence. How have we done in our experiences? How have we done on the national exam? I mean, it's asking for that rather than for only asking based on what university they went to. Is that not analogous to the medical?
The only thing that I could say to that, not being a brain surgeon, is that I think it's a whole package. When you go to a professional school, whether it's dentistry, medicine, psychology, a regionally accredited school looks at the whole package. It looks at the content of the coursework, the syllabus, for example. What are the reading materials like? Some of that can be done online, and Oregon does make room for that. A lot of it, in terms of the internship, that's where boards can determine the quality of those internships, how long they should be, what they should consist of, what kind of a peer group should be involved in the learning community.
Okay. Who's next?
Chair Greenlake, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Cliff Johansson. I'm a licensed psychologist in the state of Oregon, and I'm here representing the position of the Oregon Psychological Association. I have been a member of the Oregon Psychological Association and involved in leadership of the association for over 25 years. I've been chair of the ethics committee. I've been the president. I've been the liaison to the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners, and currently I'm the what's called the Federal Advocacy Coordinator. I have a lot of experience in watching the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners, and among other things, I've helped to write the licensing exams and have a good handle on the kinds of content that need to be mastered. And we are here speaking in opposition to this bill, and we are not seen any opportunity to improve it or make it work. Essentially, there are currently standards for education for psychologists, and those would be eliminated by this bill and replaced by regional accreditation. Now, the issue is not distance learning. The American Psychological Association has accredited distance learning programs. The Fielding Institute in California is an example that comes to mind. The distinction is between a distance learning program and a substantially online program that the American Psychological Association is not willing to accredit. So I think that's an important distinction. We're here not to speak about the delivery of the coursework, but what's the content of the coursework? What are the courses that are actually going to be taught and passed by students? So if one is going to be diagnosing and treating mental disorders, there should be a course on psychopathology, something that would prepare a student for attending an internship in a clinical setting. So it's about what courses were taken and what was the content of those courses, not what was the delivery of that coursework.
So it's not that they were done online. That's not the issue. It's that they're the wrong courses?
This bill would allow universities to determine for themselves what the curriculum would be. And it may or may not be adequate. And the Board of Psychology Examiners, like licensing boards all across the country, have reviewed against adopted standards the adequacy of programs. In my experience, the Oregon Board of Psychology Examiners at one point decided that all candidates should have a course in ethics. Many of the applicants did not have a course in ethics, and they had to obtain that in some other way. So that's an example of a content area that has been required and that wouldn't necessarily be included in the curriculum of a regionally accredited program. But this bill would obligate the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners to accept that candidate as a fully eligible potential licensee.
Dr. Henderson, are you still there?
Chair Greenlee, yes, I am.
Go for it.
Chair Greenlee and members of the committee, thank you so much for accommodating my testimony via phone. The more than 2 feet of snow in my driveway was daunting this weekend, and I so appreciate your understanding and not making me drive through that.
I didn't know anything daunted you.
Oh, sorry.
I didn't know anything daunted you.
Well, I got a big old snowman in my front yard that can prove it. House Bill 4002 is very concerning to me at a time when the U.S. DOJ is keenly focusing their attention on the provision of mental health services in our state. It just doesn't sit well to lower our standards below nationally accepted curriculum. when I went back to school, I was considered an older student. I had taken several years off between my bachelor's and my doctoral program. And at the time when I attended George Fox College to get my PsyD, George Fox was not accredited. So I am a graduate of a non-accredited institution. I didn't attend an APA-accredited internship, and I'm a licensed psychologist in the state of Oregon. And you could ask how I did that, and how I did that was working with the board and with my educational institution to meet the standards, even though the institution was not accredited. The American Psychological Association, as Dr. Johansson said, has accredited many distance learning programs like Fielding Institute, some of the programs with California School of Professional Psychology and Alliance, and many others. And you've already heard that regional accreditation has nothing to do with professional standards that we expect licensed psychologists to have in our state. I know you get those differences, and I hope that you will continue to support the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners and their protection of the people of Oregon, because for me this is a safety issue. Passing the written exam does little to ensure that someone's qualified to provide mental health services. Trust me, I know. I failed it twice before I passed it the third time. And I failed it because I was bad at taking tests, and I had hoarded test anxiety. Then I went and saw my local psychologist and got over that. But it's really the practicum and internship requirements within an APA-accredited school, along with that curriculum, that ensures that I'm qualified to provide care. As a licensed psychologist, I have a lot of privileges and a lot of duties. I can diagnose disorders with life-changing consequences and create records that follow someone for a lifetime. I can suspend someone's civil rights. I can use my discretion in Oregon to decide whether or not to report abuse. When I was actively practicing in forensics, I made life-changing decisions every day for children and their families by recommending reconciliation plans in child custody cases. You want me to have the qualifications and evidence-based curriculum to ensure that I'm qualified to provide services. You don't want to be thinking about the fact that I might not. APA accreditation provides that for Oregon and gives us that safety to make sure that our psychologists are highly qualified to protect our citizens. As Chief Behavioral Health Officer at St. Charles Health System, I've been able to expand the role of psychologists in primary care, a key new area of practice that's supporting our coordinated care organizations and all of the efforts around here in healthcare transformation. I am heavily reliant upon the high standards set by the American Psychological Association and enforced by the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners to ensure that the people I hire who are treating the population of my community are appropriately trained when they walk in the door. Because that's what the people who live in my region deserve, and that's what all Oregonians deserve. George Fox started their journey in Oregon without APA accreditation and went through the rigorous process to become accredited, meeting the standards along the way so their students could be licensed. I would enjoin any university seeking to provide doctoral level of education to people who are going to serve the citizens of Oregon to meet the existing standards rather than expend resources to lower those standards. Thank you very much for your time today.
Any questions in this panel? Yes, sir.
So many questions, Dr. Henderson. But first, I just want you to know that your representative was undaunted and took the trip across the pass for the third or fourth time over the last couple of days. So,
how many hours?
This time it wasn't bad. The worst was about four. That was rough. Just a... and I have to say, I never knew you failed the test, the written test, twice. Thank you for that bit of information. Could you just, you know, very, very briefly help me understand the sort of differences that you're talking about between, you know, the accreditation and the board's standards and maybe what is being proposed or I guess could be allowed under the bill. So I'm not 100% clear on what that means.
Representative Congress Chair Green, like I may defer to the learned member of your panel, Fran, who knows more about this than I do, but as I understand it, and as I've learned to understand regional accreditation, they're focusing on the institution's qualifications to provide an education. Mm-hmm. Are you having adequate class size, whether it's engineering or psychology? Do you have adequate teacher-to-pupil ratios? Are your buildings and your fire safety procedures adequate? Are you meeting some of those basic, what I call, the way that, here's how I liken it, actually, Representative Congress. In a hospital system, you have healthcare licensing standards that make sure that there's all of the appropriate things we need to have in a hospital so that this can function and meet licensure standards for our building and the number of people that we serve. We have the Joint Commission then who comes in and looks at us and says, are you providing the quality services that you need to provide? And that's a different thing than what healthcare licensure looks at. And that's the same differential that I see for myself between regional accreditation and APA. APA doesn't care about your building or those types of things. They care about the curriculum that you're providing and whether or not you're having a supervised experience, both in your practicum and your internship, before you get your doctoral degree. That's going to help you meet those standards. And you've met the benchmarks and all of the different confidence points along the way, and somebody with a license has signed off and said, yep, 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 yep. And that's not part of regional accreditation. It wouldn't matter if it was engineering or psychology or, you know, floor arranging. That's the purview of regional accreditation. APA is specializing in psychologists.
Thank you. That was
Robert, I'd like to ask you went to an accredited university, a regionally accredited university. George Fox, I'm sure, was regionally accredited by the Northwest, whatever it is.
Yes.
But the program you took there was not accredited by yes. APA. Yet you found a way to licensing in that instance. It seems to me that's what Walton's asking for here, to find a way to licensure for their graduates, not to automatically be locked out because they weren't in a program that was APA accredited. Is that not how you read it as well?
Chair Greenlee, how I read this is that they're asking, when I went to George Fox still, they followed the same requirements, right? So if they required an ethics class, George Fox provided an ethics class, and I had to take all of my syllabi, that was it, all of the syllabuses for all of the classes that I took during my time as a doctoral student. I bound them up in a folder, and I took them to the board, and the board pushed back on a couple things, and I had to take a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that in order to meet their standard, and I got my license. My understanding is that's available to any non-accredited student who graduates from a non-accredited institution.
What I'm asking
for is an exception from that to be accepted just because they're regionally accredited.
Let's ask that question. Could a Walden University graduate come to you with their syllabi of the courses they took and their experience?
The difference right now is that if a student comes to OBPE and presents their credentials. And if their credentials say that they're a graduate of an APA-accredited school, we don't even look at their transcripts.
No, I understand that. Okay. I'm talking about what Robin...
Yes. What happens in that case is we look more closely. We look at the transcript. We look at syllabi, if there are syllabi. We look at the internship. We go back to the person and say you're deficient here, you're deficient there. Up until the time that we updated our 1986 rule, which was just a couple years ago, we updated it, brought it up to contemporary standards. And what we still are saying at this point in time is that APA is the standard by which we judge all applicants. And if a student, whether or not they come from an APA accredited school, just a regionally accredited school, which is kind of entry level accreditation, if they come from that, if they can show us that they've met or exceeded, as many states say in their rule or statutes, if they've met or exceeded APA standards for education, they will have a pathway to licensure.
They're not automatically rejected because
no,
they came from Walden?
No. We've licensed, I couldn't tell you how many. I've been on the board 4 years, I believe. We've licensed a couple. One is currently redoing some coursework. But students that present their transcripts sometimes do have to go back, as Robin said she did, and make up some deficiencies. But if they do that, they have a pathway to licensure.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
If I could follow up on that. Part of the research that Fran did that was helpful to me was she put together a list of the healthcare boards, and all of them starting out at cosmetology, if I would call
yes.
that the low end, through embalmers, through veterinarians, through physicians and psychologists, and a host of others, the standard is that the board determines their professional standards, not regional accreditation. And I think that's the fundamental flaw in this proposal. And as you go and research nationwide, you find that for psychologists throughout the United States, it is professional standards that they must meet, not regional accreditation. That's the flaw in this. It is not opposition to online learning. That can be very helpful. Although I got to say, as a former psychology student, that interaction and face-to-face supervision was absolutely essential to the quality and directly related to the quality of my training. And I would point out, when I was in school, the school I went to was not regionally, was not APA approved at that time. By the time I graduated, it was, and my degree was then accepted here. Although they had some questions about it since it was a brand new program, and they made me do an extra 6 months of supervised experience, and I had to grow up and accept that. But I think, it was not an easy pill to swallow, because we had the most extensive supervisory experiences in the United States at that time. But I think that's the fundamental difference here that I think you want to get. You want professional standards to be set by the profession. And yes, social workers and marriage and family therapists and licensed professional counselors and hypnotists, they all are in this bag of mental health, but they all have very different standards. And I think it's appropriate that psychologists should set the standards for psychologists, not regional accreditation.
Harker, you chair the higher education committee. You have any thoughts on this whole issue?
Thank you, Chair Greenlee. I do.
It seems to me it ought to be over there rather than here anyway.
Well, I felt more convinced of that before this hearing than I do now, because it's the accreditation issue. It's not the delivery model.
Right.
That's the fundamental difference.
Yeah, right? I mean,
and it's very fundamental.
That's the crux of the matter. It's not about how it gets delivered. There is a path for people coming from a variety of institution types to obtain licensure.
I want to check that because I think, I mean, it seems to me what Walden wants is the ability for their students to present themselves with their credentials, what they've learned, but I mean, and have an opportunity to be accepted that way.
Which those, any institution would certainly want, and which the students at the institution would certainly want and should expect. But we're being told that some graduates of this program have presented their syllabi and other documents and obtained licensure or are working toward licensure by overcoming some deficiencies.
Right. Well, I think it would be very interesting if you could tell us that since your modernization, whether a Walden student actually could bring the syllabus if they had taken all the classes that you require, they had all the supervised experiences you require, you would then grant them a license.
Representative Greenlick, we licensed two Walden graduates in psychology this past year, one in January and one, I think, a year or so ago, both after they made up some deficiencies. And another one has applied and is currently attempting to make up some deficiencies, as I understand it. Things change, and I would like to underscore what Representative Harker said. It's not the method of delivery. I think all schools in this century use some online or distance learning modeling. There are a variety of different learning methods that can be very helpful and very acceptable to learning the skills in the profession that one needs to learn. I think what Representative Kenemer said, I would just like to underscore, dentists ought to decide that for dentists. Psychologists ought to decide that for psychologists. I've been on a regional accrediting board, and my compatriots on that board were mathematicians, biologists, people from a variety of different academic backgrounds that were not equipped to judge the standards for dentistry, for medicine, for psychology. They were very good at looking at the infrastructure of the institution and saying, can this institution, does it have the resources financially, academically, that it needs in order to do what it says it wants to do, which is teach, mostly give baccalaureate degrees.
Okay. Representative Thompson?
Several people have spoken now to graduating from unaccredited institutions and getting their accreditation through you and then eventually the institution being accredited. What would be the process for Walden to get its program accredited in a similar manner?
By APA? APA would have to make that decision. Oregon can't make that decision. OBPE can't make that decision. At the present time, and Cliff probably, Dr. Johansson probably knows more about that than I do. At the present time, APA has repeatedly studied this issue and decided against offering a pathway to accreditation to primarily distance learning programs. I do not know what all of their reasoning is. Perhaps you do?
I actually don't know the specific criteria that they used or the explanations for why they made the decisions that they made. I do know that they have a longstanding commitment to accrediting distance learning programs that involve a wide variety of different media. So it's,
but they're specifically not accrediting programs that are basically online.
That's correct.
Okay, can I ask a question? So is it...
Larson Widener first,
oh,
and then
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Thank you. You know, my concern listening to all this, and I hear it being talked about a little bit, but I want to make sure there's not a bias to online schools whatsoever, because I've seen kids just flourish in online schools. I mean, my kids and I have a lot of activities. We go out, all of a sudden my one son does a flip on a wakeboard. Where'd you learn that? I watched YouTube videos over and over. Mm-hmm. So what does a YouTube video have to do with it? Nothing really, but he saw and picked up the tips. And online, even for psychology, I see guys being able to look at 10 times as many case studies, being able to go through this and become probably a better psychologist, depending upon how their brain works and how they learn. We heard a doctor who failed the test two times. Might have been if she had more case studies and everything presented in front of her on an online environment, she might have been more successful. So my question is, how many online schools are APA accredited right now, or that you would accept their accreditations from one of these online schools that are out there?
We would accept accreditation from any school that APA has accredited. We wouldn't question it once they've made that decision. I think the issue is certainly, you know, OBPE allows for a lot of online learning. We have just changed our rule again to update it to allow more online continuing education opportunities, and those have been very important for psychologists. So I see us expanding that, if nothing else. The issue is not, again, the delivery method. Is it online, or is it some? Is it a hybrid method, or is it in a classroom with bricks and mortar? The issue is so much is more who decides that, who decides the content and the qualifications and the criteria that make up that YouTube video.
Yeah.
All right, so just for a moment, we do have the necessary paperwork to work 40, 50, and I expect we will as soon as we're done with this hearing. Follow-up?
So just follow-up real Kenny quick. Geyer? So if they provided their curriculum to you, then you would go through and say, this is where you're short, and this is what your students would need to be accredited in.
We've done that numerous times.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I again, was just trying to understand whether the statement from Walden saying that APA's Commission on Accreditation adopted a regulation in 2010 that prohibits programs that are fully or substantially online from applying, but and yet you call out Fielding as an example of an online program that is accredited. So I'm trying to understand, is it really true that there's complete prohibition, or because I get how this, I get the frustration if they really can't apply for program accreditation, and yet I also see where this bill is basically saying an approved doctoral program in psychology is either accredited by APA, or to get around that, since there's a barrier there, regionally accredited, which doesn't really speak to the program quality. So that's
right.
The problem,
right.
Is trying to go around something that's a block that may be an unfair block at a national level, but it's doing it by saying you're an approved psychology program just because you're regionally accredited, and that regional accreditation does not take into account the... So I think the response to it seems to me not to be the appropriate response here in this bill, but I am sympathetic to the fight at the national level. So I'm just
curious.
May I
respond to that?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, this is Tracy Marsh. The language, it is very explicit. It was introduced by APA in 2010, July 2010, that prohibits, it was in their implementing regulations, that prohibits any program that is online or, quote, substantially online from applying. APA is in the process now of revising their accreditation standards. They just released them a few weeks ago and strengthen the statement by moving that same statement into the standards. There's only one program that is substantially online that is accredited. That's Fielding University. And they, in fact, were accredited prior to this prohibition. So it is a roadblock. I think the other piece is that we have a number of professional programs at Walden in a variety of disciplines. I am aware that psychology is the only association that has this prohibition. Every one of our other professional programs, nursing, education, mental health counseling, business, all have the ability to apply for accreditation and, in fact, have received accreditation in their respective professions. So I am with my colleagues on the phone and in the room that accreditation is a worthy and important process. We just face a stumbling block that we can't even get through the door to apply.
And may I add in, this is Dr. Henderson, may I add in?
Go for it.
I'm not sure nursing would be one that would be completely online. My understanding is online, complete BSN programs online. BSN completion, yes. But a BSN program, no. So let's make sure that we've got apples and apples here in the conversation that we have.
Well, and I appreciate that. I also want to be sure that there's no misunderstanding. We are not a fully online program. Like the nursing programs we have, like the mental health counseling programs, we have a full in-person supervised experience that of over 3,000 hours at the doctoral level of live supervised experience with a practitioner, and our curriculum is designed to meet the to be equivalent to or exceed APA standards, and that was revised in 2011.
Well, I think we didn't intend to move this bill. We will take it up either in higher ed or here in 2015. I think the way it's written currently doesn't solve the problem. I think simply substituting regional accreditation for program accreditation is the answer. But I think trying to make sure we have a pathway for a legitimate education experience to allow their students to be applying for accreditation and meeting the standards is probably an important thing to happen.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I just add a comment here? I think as someone who's gone through this training, one of the difficulties with online is there are certain areas in which online schooling is equivalent. In fact, I think I would argue better, because there are not a lot of other distractions and others wasting your time. On the other hand, I'm hearkening back to the fact that in my coursework, and I don't know how someone would get through without intensive supervised experience, I would sit in classes of whatever nature, and we would do spontaneous role play or a form of supervision. And these were extremely valuable. These are things that are missing in an online experience because there is not that opportunity to interact. Like, I remember still how powerful it was. I call it a marker event. The very first time I did role playing, and I can't remember the name, I think it was adolescent psychology, Professor Maloney said to me, you know, he says, Bill, you have a way with words and it's not always good. And it was a marvelous piece of feedback that created an enormous amount of thinking on my part. And I realized that when I had responded pretty darn glibly and in a way that was sort of PC, but not a way that was therapeutic. And that's the kind of experience that makes the difference between a good clinician and an extraordinary clinician, or perhaps even a poor
We also had the experience of sitting through hours and hours and hours of a totally useless class.
Absolutely, and I'd say amen to that as well. And I've done a bunch of that.
Yeah, we actually had the experience of actually teaching some of those. So.
Well, I would not admit to having taught such, but I have done some teaching, yes.
All right, last word.
Chair Greenlake, we've been focusing on Walden University, and I do appreciate their plight. OBPE will continue to work with them as we can to assist their students. But there are many other regionally accredited schools out there that may not pay as much attention as Walden does to the quality of their programs.
So the programs ought to be determined on their merit, not on whether or not they're essentially...
This bill would open the door to all of them.
Yeah, well, we want to find some way maybe to work between that. Might be very useful. Thank you all on both sides. This is a difficult issue. The whole question of professional standards is a very important issue, and you're right. This is the place for that, I think. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4002 and open a work session on House Bill 4050. We have an amendment to this bill. In the history of the bill, if I can describe what we're talking about, this is a bill that it used to be in Oregon that groups of 1 to 50 employees could not buy reinsurance for self-insuring their employees. changing the law when we redefine small groups, change that number from to include 51 to 100 groups. And we had a proposal here before us to deal with that by changing the definition of covered lives for FTEs. There was discussion when we had the hearing on taking away that prohibition altogether, and in a premature moment, I got an amendment, the Dash 1 amendments, that would take away that restriction entirely. Since I've been warned that there may be some unintended consequences by doing this, and that we ought to look at that more carefully in 2015, but in the meantime, we'll have the Dash 2 amendments in front of us, which move us back to the status quo. It will allow groups with 51 to 100 employees to be able to self-insure and to buy reinsurance. So I'm asking that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments and pass the bill so it would restore the status quo as it was before this redefinition of small group.
In effect, undoing one of the unintended consequences of the last action.
Exactly.
Mr. Chair, if I can say too, and I think also consistent with our short session where we don't have time to explore in depth some of the issues that would need that, but let's make some temporary corrections to unintended consequences.
And that's what we have in front of us. So can I have a motion? Let's put a motion on the floor first.
Okay.
Let's get a motion on the bill and then a motion on the amendment. Is that the right order or the other way?
Amendment first. Chair Greenlick, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 4050, dated 2-10-14.
Representative Thompson moves that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments, dated 2-10-14, to House Bill 4050. Representative Wiley?
Mr. Chair, I didn't see anything wrong with your Dash 1 amendments, and the unintended consequences, I think, would be in the positive for companies that could afford to do it. So
I'm just literally not sure that's true. I started getting some feedback from the insurance business saying, why do we have this? There was some uneasiness. I think that may be the answer. And I also hear that we may get that amendment back to us from the Senate because they may feel that way. And if they do, it'll be a different story. But I think this is the more prudent way of
this is the safe
taking
way.
The first step. The safer way. You know me, I'm all for safe ways.
Sometimes.
Wasn't a short session when we moved Senate Bill 99 through here?
Sure was. Look at the problem with doing this.
And a long session. You chose the wrong example.
Yes, you have a comment?
I'm okay with this because I think at least we're not going backwards. We're keeping the status quo. I actually was very excited by the organic discussion that happened and the idea that those providing the insurance would do the risk review and decide whether and offer a price, and employers would then it would be a self-selection process on whether they can do it. So I was excited by that. If it goes through as is now, at least we're not restricting this possibility to even fewer groups. We're keeping it the groups that are eligible now, but I'd like to see it next year.
We definitely will see it.
Question on the amendment?
Yes, is there any objections to the amendment? Any no votes to the amendment? Remove the amendment. Now the motion on the bill is amended.
Chair Grenlick, I move that we adopt House Bill 4050 and send it to the floor. To the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 4050 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion on that?
Mr. Chair, yes. Why does everybody look at me if there's any no votes? All of a sudden, that's the only time I get attention. Are there any no votes on this? And everybody's looking at me.
I look both ways.
You're right. We shouldn't do it.
I look to the far left and the far right. Please call the roll.
Representative Pinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Wiley?
Aye.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Representative Klim?
Excuse.
Representative Hunger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Green?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Harker, will you carry this?
You betcha. Thank you.
I close the work session, House Bill 4050. Again, remind us that we've carried over House Bill 4154 to Wednesday, and that we have received -6, -7, -8, -9, and -10 amendments. I know there's at least one more coming. Those are noted for the record and are on the Viola system now. And I,
Mr. Chair, can I don't know if you were going to gavel us out here, but just out of curiosity, are we having someone from Cover Oregon come to, you know, to answer questions? Are we going to? Is there going to be any testimony?
We could, if there are questions. I mean, I haven't planned any testimony, but if we need it, I'm sure people from Cover Oregon will be available.
Well, I do think that, and this obviously is, I guess, self-serving in some sense, because I was concerned about the length of time of the waiver, and I'm going to offer an amendment that would effectively make it indefinite, but part of the information I thought would be relevant, certainly to me, in trying to understand whether or not that makes sense, was knowing the demographics of people who have signed up. Mm. And
I don't think they have that information available yet. I think that's clear.
And maybe they do, maybe they don't. But and also knowing what the governor has requested, and I haven't gotten a response on that either.
Well, could we try and get that response before Wednesday? That would be very helpful.
I would love to, but if I don't, can we call John Colmer in and ask, you know, what's the nature of the waiver? Do, you know, does it match up with what we're doing here? Because I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Would you send an email to him and copy the rest of the committee on it? And let's
sure.
see if we can get an answer on the record before.
Yes, I will.
Also, Mr. Chair, I don't know how to formally do this, but before you gavel out, do you want to give Representative Conger the opportunity to vote on 4157?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. We need a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Conger to vote on
4137.
4137. Yes, is there a motion?
No, I move that we suspend the rules.
Any objection? Hearing no objection?
Aye. And thank you. Appreciate
it. I'm sorry, I had a note to do that. Exactly. But I lost it. Any other business to come before?
Good deal.
We're adjourned.